Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio for the listening pleasure of the Five Eyes Surveillance and Intelligence Network. Get a job, guys. Like, do something that matters or accomplishes something that's better for the world. You know, just stop being a dick, bro. Like, you're not actually accomplishing anything. Like, what are you doing? You're watching the Vinny Eastwood Show. I even tell my listeners to turn off the goddamn show because they should be going out there and making the world a better place and all of that kind of stuff. And in fact, a lot of times, ladies and gentlemen, I'll have listeners talking to me and things like that, and they'll say, "Oh, Vinny, I'm sorry I haven't caught up your show in years because I'm doing this thing and that other thing and that other thing." And they expect me to say, "Oh, well, you should be listening to more of my show." No. In fact, you're doing the right thing. Don't sit around being entertained by somebody, no matter how freaking amazing they are, if you've got something better to do in the world. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that's the point of this show. We do it for you, that one person who's listening right now, who at some point during the broadcast will have a realization that, oh my God, I've got something to contribute to the world. I'm going to turn off Vinny Eastwood. I'm going to go start doing that. Okay, that's the point of the show. If anybody else is doing a show and that's not the point of their show, you shouldn't be listening to them in the first fucking place. Okay, now, anyway, my very special guest is Benny Wells from Joy Camp, coming at us from the icy climes of the Northern Hemisphere. Welcome to the show, bro.
Vinny, it's a pleasure to be on your show again.
What's with the get-up? I thought you were living in California where it was warm, bro.
It's been a long time since we talked. No, I live in northern eastern Washington now, where it's quite cold.
That's not entirely too far from the American Freedom Radio studio, where it's snowing all the time, and of course wearing a beanie inside, that's a good indication of how cold it is.
Yeah, well, I live inside of a travel trailer, which you'll see behind me, and yeah, it's pretty cold in here today.
Nice. Well, the question on my mind, really, considering we haven't actually chatted in some time, is, you know, hey, bro, what have you been up to, man?
Great question. I've been up to a lot, man. I mean, you know, being on this quest for truth, I took it to heart, so I basically left Los Angeles, left California, which has, you know, changed the course of Joy Camp somewhat. But I've been traveling a lot and speaking a lot and performing a lot at various events and conferences around the world. So that's been really great. Left LA with my girlfriend. Now we're living up here in Pacific Northwest. We're doing real estate stuff. And yeah, just trying to live the best life I can in the midst of this crazy matrix.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wonder as well what's happening in the United States right at this moment with that weather system and how freaked out people are by it. You know, there's homeless people freaking freezing to death and shit like that. I imagine, just like in New Zealand when we have like one case of extreme weather, it's the only thing the news fucking talks about.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, I don't really watch the news, so I don't know what kind of coverage it's getting. But I'm assuming it's probably dominating the news. It seems like it's died out a little bit. It's gotten a little warmer. But that cold that was not really affecting us as much has now moved west to where we are. It's cold here. Oh. Not as cold as I guess it was, but it's pretty cold.
Yeah, well, not as...
For me, it's cold. Southern California boy, it's cold.
Yeah. Well, my brother, he lives in Tahiti, and so when he brings his sons here, and even when it's in the middle of summer in New Zealand, they're wearing jerseys and all of that kind of stuff, and they're freezing and that kind of thing. So eventually, you kind of get used to it, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, I'm guessing at some point I'll get used to it. Currently, I'm cold.
Yeah. Well, I think it was Lewis Black who said it best. It was an utter dog shit winter, but dog shit would have been better because it's warmer. I only had two thoughts the entire winter. Fuck, it's cold. Or it's cold as fuck.
Yeah, pretty much.
Let's get down.
Luckily, I'll be in Mexico next week. It'll be much warmer.
Are you going to an Acapulco?
Yeah, I'll be speaking there for the fourth time.
Wow, awesome, bro. What are you going to be speaking about?
Yeah. Well, I use my opportunity to speak to perform. Since I'm a performer of 20-plus years, people can say things really well and I'll let them do the speaking, I'll do the performing. So basically, I use all my stage experience to come up with a routine that is half poetry and half comedy. In fact, someone last year termed it or coined it as being George Carlin meets Dr. Seuss, which I think is a really apt description, and also a compliment. I think that's an awesome, you know, group to be associated with.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of high praise indeed. What exactly is this to do with? I mean, is there a subject matter? Is there something? Because you've been there four times. What were the last three versus this one?
Right. So the first time I went was the very first Anarchapulco, and I just gave a speech. And then I didn't go back to the second year, but I went back the third year, and I'd been writing a bunch of poetry, again, that has like a real melodic quality to it that takes on subjects. It's not really about my personal feelings, but it's more of a, you know, a way of consolidating my thoughts into a creative product. And I didn't tell anybody, and I got up on stage and used my 40-minute slot to perform, and it couldn't have gone over better. I mean, it was received really well by the audience. I think I got 3 standing ovations in 40 minutes. So it was very validating for me and empowering. So, yeah, I just really decided to step into it after that. And I call what I do stand-up poetry. And, yeah, man, it's just been amazing ever since. I've gone to a bunch of conferences and events literally all over the world since to do this. And, yeah, so I'm going back next week to try out some new material and, you know, touch base with a lot of my friends and meet a lot of new and interesting folks.
Mm. I've been actually watching some of the older Acapulco presentations, you know, Larkin Rose, Max Egan, Mark Passio, you know, these guys are great. And I think maybe it was last week, I think I had an interview with Mark Passio, and we were having a real good time. Right, and I was just thinking about it, and it's coincidental that, you know, you're going out in Acapulco too, and that kind of thing. And the topic of this thing is why conspiracy and comedy is a good mix. And I liken it to fruit. If you take the sugar and extract it out of an apple, that sugar's not that good for you. But if you eat the apple with the fiber contained, it neutralizes the sugar and is, in fact, healthy for you. And I think conspiracy and comedy have that exact same relationship.
Absolutely. And especially now more than ever. I mean, people are becoming more and more have more anger associated with their opinions than ever. So if you can find a more lighthearted approach to trying to communicate, you're better off, because people don't want their minds changed, and they're actually adamantly against conspiracies more than ever, more than I've ever seen right now. So if you can try to like crack a joke in a way to like break the ice so that they're more willing to engage. Gosh, I mean, it's more important than ever.
Mm. Well, I also think it's as a conspiracy theorist, you know, the label that's been dumped on us. I think it's absolutely essential to see the madness in what it is that we're studying, and to not let that madness affect us. I think, and that's the way of dispelling. It's kind of like alchemy, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. Turning the poison into nourishment in a way, you know, shining light on it. And because it's also very therapeutic for me. I mean, if I can if I can take all these thoughts and all my contemplation and all my concerns and all the things I'm seeing and, you know, distill it down to something that I can share with people, it's a way of, you know, filtering it through my own system and making sense of it so then I can deliver it to other people. And so, yeah, I mean, it's healthy for me, and then it's healthy for the people who are experiencing it.
Yeah, something that Dr. Bill Deagle told me on an interview once is that theoretical physicists and comedians in general have the, on average, highest IQ. And I thought, well, that's really interesting. He goes, why? And I say, well, what does a comedian and a theoretical physicist do that's the same? Okay? You know, think about it, ladies and gentlemen. What is a joke? A joke is you're taking a whole bunch of disparate things that aren't related, that don't make sense, and you're delivering them in a way that actually does make sense. Okay. Same thing with theoretical physics. You're taking all these different formulas that are all over the place, and then all of a sudden you compress them down, and then they can be understood. Now, I think the reason for this is kind of like an evolutionary mechanism. So you'll find a lot of people who've developed a comedic sense or whatever have done so more or less as a fucking survival mechanism. Because if you don't laugh, you'll cry, as Abraham Lincoln once said.
True. Yeah, I think that, you know, a skill that I have, and for maybe it's a survival instinct or what, but I'm able to make, I can find humor in anything. I think that's really important. And anytime anyone says, like, that's not funny, you shouldn't make a joke about that, I think, stop. Because we have the freedom to do so. And if you can make it light, even if it is the darkest thing you can imagine, it makes it easier to talk about. And it's easier to face if you're able to, you know, especially when you're dealing with evil forces, because we're dealing with some pretty evil shit in the world. You know, if you can laugh at it, it makes it much easier to accept and then take on and find some sort of path towards defeating that evil. Because you're not as afraid of it anymore.
Well, or at the very least, helping you with the attrition. Because I think a lot of us are in a war. Especially the males in the truth movement, we're actually in a war mindset, essentially. We're in this kind of battle. For some of us, that battle's psychological. We see problems with the human race and the way they feel, the way they think, and that kind of thing, and we go out against those. But for some people, the war is not just metaphysical. They think it's just physical, and so the, you know, they're doing their martial arts and they're doing their shooting training and all of these kind of things. Whereas I believe a combination of metaphysical combat techniques as well as physical combat techniques is going to be absolutely necessary to defeat the evil that we're up against, because they're using everything.
Yep, absolutely. Not only are they using everything, but it's also, I mean, it's spiritual. I think this is a spiritual war, and it's a war that's going on inside of our own minds all the time. I mean, to think that the war is somewhere, the only war is physical and it's happening someplace in some foreign land far, far away, and we're safe here, not true. We are experiencing that war every single day by how we make decisions and how we navigate through this matrix. It's psychological warfare, you know, and it's get to use so much discernment and critical thinking and, you know, keeping our own priorities in check and making sure we're not doing things that are, you know, out of sync or hurting anybody or, yeah, I mean, it's a very tricky matrix we're dealing with.
I don't think that there's so much people are really understanding how much they don't know. And that's the biggest problem, because if you're going to frickin' deal with a problem, actually understanding it is probably the first step in it, right? And I think, what was it? I was talking with one of my listeners the other day. You can't convince anybody of anything. And I said, no. That's absolutely untrue. You can totally convince people of things, but the first thing you've got to do is convince them that you agree with them and their disagreements, right? And you go, like, what does that mean? What do you mean by that? And they go, well, let's say somebody supports vaccines, but they know the pharmaceutical companies are corrupt. You start off with, you believe the pharmaceutical companies are corrupt, right? And they go, yeah. Who produces the vaccines? The pharmaceutical companies. All right, so you use what they already know and what they already agree with against them, essentially. And that's how you actually win arguments with people that you're disagreeing with, because in order to disagree with you, they'd have to disagree with themselves. And most people are too egotistical to fucking let that happen, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, you got to find the common ground. I mean, yeah, it's baffling to me how closely associated people's egos are with their opinions. So if you challenge their opinion, you're somehow, you know, insulting their overall intelligence and who they are as a person. When in reality, having your outdated opinions replaced with new ideas is evolution. That's how we get smarter. That's how we get wiser. But people are, you know, they want to appear like they have it all together and they have all the everything figured out, so that you don't see them as being weak or something.
Yeah, I had a conversation with a Labour Party member. They're like the Democrats of New Zealand kind of thing, but except they're red instead of blue. Oh, this is interesting how the colour dynamic works in all our political parties, isn't it? But anyway, the thing that she was talking about to me was is that this is article that comes out that says that the blue party that we've got, this is called the National Party, which are more like like the Republicans, which are the Red Party in the thing, have hired these trolls and teams of trolls to go out and troll their political opponents and all of this kind of stuff. And then the Labour Party comes out and they go, oh, that's just so terrible. Oh, they're hiring people to harass people online and spread their messages? That's horrible. And then I comment on the thread, is anybody naive enough to think that the Labour Party don't do the same thing? All right. Now, immediately what happened is I start getting trolled by people from the Labour Party denying the fact that the Labour Party trolls people. Now, I found that funny, but they didn't get the joke.
So they're trolling you about you calling them trolls?
No, they're trolling me because I simply accepted the possibility that there might be trolls there. And
exactly. Proof of concept.
And the bulk of their trolling was about denying the fact. Oh, fuck. Oh, my God. He split me in two with laughter. Oh, my God. Oh, it's good. It's good. And he did. Well, see, that's the thing. When you're detached from your ego, you can see things in a sort of from the outside as a sort of impartial observer. Like, man, I'm a dick. But when you are a dick, and the only thing you can see is dick vision, you know, there's little chance that dick's going to go flaccid, and you go, oh, okay, I'm going to start paying attention now. You know, that kind of thing. You know. Or a dick paying attention. I don't know what the metaphor is I was going with there, but you get the point, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, hypocrisy runs deep. It's everywhere.
Well, it's our political system now. People thought it was a democracy, but it's a mispronunciation. It's actually a hypocrisy.
Mm. Even democracy, I think that's a misconstrued word. I mean, yeah. I had to shed the. My association with that word a couple of years ago, because democracy literally just means mob rule.
Yeah.
So that the majority rules, even if what they're deciding on is not in the best interest of everybody, but they win because they're in the majority. Like, that's not really a great system. So when people say we got to fight for the democracy, I'm like, what are you really fighting for? You're fighting to have a group of idiots potentially determine your future. I don't like the sound of that.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking, I was just deconstructing the word for a second, and there's no validity to this whatsoever. D as in, that's a failing grade. Mock as in, you're being made fun of. And crazy, crazy as in, oh my God, this guy's nuts. All right, yeah. So stupid people who are insulting and not sane. That's democracy.
Yeah,
all right?
Exactly.
It sounds about right to me. And... I think it was, who was it? It might have been Larkin Rowe speaking at an Acapulco last year who said this or something of that nature. But if 70% of the population of the US theoretically are some of the dumbest pieces of shit that have ever walked the fucking earth, have the controlling vote. All right, so this is why the population gets dumbed down, and this is why the vote gets given to people, is because dumb people are more likely to believe fucking liars, and liars figured this out. So you go, well, why don't we just dumb them down and keep lying to them, and that way we get to stay in power? Oh my God, it works! It works again and again and again and again and again and again.
Yep.
Bush, Clinton, Bush, Obama, Trump—it doesn't matter, ladies and gentlemen. The agenda fucking continues because idiots believe what they say.
Exactly. And going back to that idea that the war is everywhere all around us, I mean, people are idiots because of how they're living their lives within this matrix and what choices they're making regarding what they're putting in their bodies, you know, what they're eating, what they're drinking, where they're putting their focus, what they're watching, what they're taking in, you know, all of it. The cell phone signals and the Wi-Fi and everything, all these things are contributing towards that dumbing down of humanity. And, yeah.
I think that there's something to be said for the dumbing down of humanity, and perhaps, you know, a lot of people benefit from this, okay? Because I think when I was 14 or whatever, maybe Americans don't know this. The world hates Americans, all right? No, I mean, seriously, just think about it for a second. It's a domineering power, kind of like how in ancient times people would despise the Romans, but they still use their roads, they still use their aqueducts and all of that kind of stuff. You've built all this stuff for you, but we still don't like you. So at the time, even at as a 14-year-old New Zealander, I realized something. Man, if I could just go to New Zealand and start scamming people, people are so dumb there that my scams would work a hell of a lot better than anywhere else in the rest of the world. And that's a 14-year-old's assumption on the nature of the American psyche. And it was accurate to a point that is so frightening to me as an adult now that I even remembered that I did that, you know?
Yeah.
How ashamed would I be if I was living in a country that had X amount of potential and has X amount of living up to it? You know, that's quite frightening, because this whole patriotism ideology is like, oh, we're so great, we're the freest country in the world, when the reality is, it's not an entirely unique experiment. The only thing that's really unique about the United States is that they physically, by force, threw off their oppressors and instituted a gun protection system, right? More or less. Everybody else in the British Empire had freedom of religion and all of these other kind of things, but it was mostly having the ability to fight back against your oppressor that is given to Americans. And it's very, very ingrown to the American ideology. And I think Mark Passio was talking about this on his podcast yesterday, that if you go to any American gun show, you will see that there is an enormous resistance mindset within this country. And there are people who will not lie down. They will not fucking do nothing when the darkness closes in around them. They will fire their weapons at people who are invading their country, and especially the enemies who are domestic.
Exactly. That's certainly what it seems like. It seems like there's a civil war energy brewing, whether what that will lead to or what that would mean, I don't know, but there's such a... the polarization here in the United States is... I mean, it's astounding to see what... Especially, it's coming from the left. I'm not going to lie. It's from the left. And I'm someone who's not involved with politics or on either side, but the left side of the equation, the blue side, the Democrats, the liberals, the socialists, they are really demonizing everything, anybody else who doesn't agree with them, and really trying to implement this socialist order and trying to make anybody who's not a Democrat or not a liberal seem like the worst person you can imagine. You know, racist, bigoted, homophobic, Nazi, gun wielding, you know, morons. And that's a really scary thing. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of tension like I've never experienced before here. And I'm so glad to be out of Los Angeles, because that's one of the, you know, one of the hubs for that idiocy. I'm actually in, you know, where I am in Washington is a rather conservative area, and it's a lot more calm, man. A lot more peaceful here. People, even if you see them walking around with guns, you know, they're not looking to start any trouble. They're just there to live their lives, and I'm finding it much easier to communicate and to be around conservatives than I can around liberals, which is also shocking to me, because I grew up. Yeah, I guess I kind of leaned in that direction as a teenager, and I grew up mostly around liberal-minded people, and that side of the equation has gone off the deep end. They are fucking crazy and mean and so mean and so hate-filled, and the irony is their whole slogan is resist hate, but they're the most hateful people I can imagine. And yeah, so there's certainly that energy in the air of like left versus right, and the left is just pushing, 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 and if the right side of the equation, you know, has a moment of weakness, they will shoot first because they have the gun. So it's very tense. So, I mean, people who have, you know, the right has to really be patient and really just like stay strong and stay grounded. And not just the right, but like anybody who's just not in that blue wave, as they call it, you know, and just hold true, because the left, the socialist movement has control of the media, social media, entertainment, education. I mean, the tentacles are so far reaching that it's amazing that we're putting up this much of a resistance, frankly.
Yeah, well, who was it? I think it was G. Edward Griffin, who was interviewing a former KGB agent, and he said that the KGB's job is to undermine your morality, undermine your religion, undermine your economy, and then get you fighting with each other. And then once you start really fighting with each other in a civil war type fashion, that's when they'll come in to save the day and normalize everything. And by normalize, they mean exterminating all the radical leftists that brought the country to this terrible state in the first place. You know why? Because if you allow radical leftists to be in your dictatorship, who are all ideological idiots, that kind of thing, they might overthrow your dictatorship that you just imposed. But if you come in and you say, hey, we're normalizing everything, and all these socialists go, oh, yeah, great, our saviors are here, and then they go to their conferences, and then they get exterminated, and suddenly no resistance anymore, and everything becomes normalized. This is the plan.
Wow, that's so diabolical and so advanced. Then what happens to the rest of us? Slaves?
Yeah. I mean, what happened to all the people in East Berlin, you know, under communism and the Soviet bloc and all of that kind of stuff, is that you can't get out. Everybody's a local spy, and all the media are lying all the time because it's controlled by the KGB or the intelligence agencies and things like that. And when this guy was giving this thing, former KGB agent, you know, escaping to the US, speaking with G. Edward Griffin about this, and this is in 1976, he's saying this. And watching it today is terrifying.
Yeah. Gosh, if you have a link, send it to me, because I'd like to see that.
Yeah. I will, actually. In fact, in the chat room, ladies and gentlemen, Miss Motherfucker or Polly B or any of you, you want to find that, just search G. Edward Griffin, KGB agent, and see if you can pop that link in the chat there so I can get it to Benny, because that's it's so important to know, it's so important to know that there is a specific agenda, there is a specific plan. Now, G. Edward Griffin said another thing, I think it might have been at the John Birch Society in 2008, that his aunt used to be able to tell a male kitten from a female kitten. And everybody was like perplexed by this. They wonder, how do you do that? And she would never tell him. Now, 20, 30 years later, he would ask her again, how did you figure that out? And she said, well, when you look at the male cats, and you look at their face, it's broader in the middle there. And when you look at the female cats, they're a lot narrower and shaped to a point. And that's how you tell what sex a cat is when it's a kitten. And he's like, wow. An important realization as a conspiracy theorist really occurred to him then, is that just because something's confusing, just because you don't think that there's an answer or whatever, sometimes just a little bit of extra knowledge can help make the whole thing make sense, you know? And that's what this KGB agent's testimony did for me.
Wow. Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's great. I love G. Edward.
Well, there's a lot of elders in the truth movement that I think a lot of us younger cats. I mean, you started this gig kind of the same time I did, same time as James Corbett, and a number of the rest of us have been around for just this last decade. And one of the realizations I've been repeating during the show is that if you'd been paying attention for just the last decade alone, you're living in a state of constant déjà vu right now. Okay, you know, oh, hope and change. Somebody's going to take out the globalists if we just vote for them. Where have I seen this before? And then he just invades another country anyway for their oil. Oh, okay. Where have I seen this before? Oh, exactly. they're implementing a whole bunch of police state measures after fake terrorism attacks that they staged in schools and so on and so forth. Where have I fucking seen this before?
Over and over again. Yep.
Yeah. So the question is, how can we as a species understand our problem if we suffer from collective amnesia, if every 10 years the same lessons have to be taught to us because we fucking forgot them?
It's an excellent question, because I'm finding that my argument is always basically the same. I mean, I always reduce it down to logic, and I feel like it's painfully obvious how messed up everything is, and it's getting harder and harder to talk to people. I mean, I've been using this example recently. I've been disowned by some family members in the past 6 months simply for what I stand for, which is truth. and I'm not, I mean, I don't apply any labels to myself. I don't really identify with anything that people try to like put, you know, pin on me. I'm just an open-minded guy who's critical thinking and, you know, try to figure out. I accept that this is a matrix and this is, we're being controlled and yada yada. But anyway, I'm the same person that I was 15 years ago that I am today, just more advanced and actually a better version of myself. But because of my stances on conspiracy and whatnot, I've had people in my family cut me off because they think I'm too radical, I'm too dangerous, and I don't have any empathy because I'm not giving in to these traps of these fake woke traps of what the left wants me to believe in, like, I don't know, whatever the social issues are and how, you know, the victimhood, basically. Like, if I don't support, and it's funny because I don't support gay people or black people or women, but there's all these movements to make them celebrate their victimhood, to be against the oppressor. And anyway, by me being a conspiracy theorist, I'm a danger and a threat to society, and therefore I've been, you know, cut off by family members. That didn't happen 10 years ago, but it's happening now. And I'm the same person as I was 10 years ago. So that's proof that this is like really accelerating and that there's more division and more, you know, like 10 years ago, like when we first started doing this stuff, people may have like rolled their eyes at me or they may have shrugged me off and like, oh, he, you know, whatever, paranoid conspiracy theorist. But now they're like, fuck that guy. Fuck him. What an asshole. How dare he say these things? And that's a pretty scary thing to realize. You know, like, whoa, I'm actually now being, I'm becoming the enemy, when I used to just be the guy that some people were like, oh, whatever. That's an interesting alarming place to be.
Arthur Schopenhauer and Gandhi said similar things nearly 200 years spaced apart. First, they ignore you, then they fight you, then you win. That's Gandhi. And Schopenhauer said, truth goes through three stages. Right. First, it is ignored, then it is violently opposed, and then it is accepted as self-evident. Now, it wasn't until maybe the 1970s when the grief process was actually discovered. What was that? Denial? Anger? Bargaining. Oh, he denies the truth, he gets angry with you for speaking it, and then he bargains with you, he accepts it, right? But there's two other stages to that fucking grief process that people ain't gone through yet. Two stages which both you and I and everybody else in this truth movement worth their salt has gone through. Depression and acceptance, okay? Now, this is what the left, in particular the radical left, have yet to go through. They may not be depressed enough to realize that they need to accept their situation. I think it was Solzhenitsyn was locked in a gulag. He wrote this book called The Gulag Archipelago. Okay, so he's in a communist dictatorship. They've thrown him in a prison for no freaking good reason, and he has nothing to do but sit there and wonder how he contributed to this. All right? Now, that's the fucking most horrific realization any of us will ever have, ladies and gentlemen. How am I responsible for the fucked up situations in my life? Even though I didn't 100% cause them, I may have allowed them to happen. I may have attracted those things to me. I may have put my intentions out there to have this shit happen to me, right? And this is a realization I had just in the last week, having an interview with Sam Vaknin, who's a expert on psychopathy and narcissism. And I'm a narcissist, and one of the things he said, which was actually quite poignant, is that narcissists will do whatever their society will reward them for doing. My society rewards me for telling the truth, for being a nice guy, and for fighting evil and helping those who can't help themselves. Now, if my society only helped me for doing the opposite of that, I would do that, you know. But fortunately, I've been punched in the face many times in my life for not doing very nice things for people, for not saying very nice things, and it gave me a really interesting realization that Maybe that's not such a great fucking idea, and I change my behavior. But unfortunately, we've got a whole bunch of people who aren't willing to accept their responsibility for the situation that they themselves have contributed to. They are not the sole cause of their victimhood, but they are contributing to it. And unless they realize that, they will forever be victims, and that means that they will forever be somebody's pawn.
Couldn't agree more, and really very well said. Yeah, that's the problem with what, you know, all the emphasis on these issues are anyway, to get us to constantly be blaming everything in our lives other than ourselves. Not blaming, but to take any responsibility, saying, you know, this person did this to me, and these circumstances, and my financial situation, and my boss, and this and that, and all these things, rather than empowerment, when the real, you know, education should be in you are you and you are awesome and be you and explore, you know, be the best you can and be a good person and don't blame anybody else. Like, empower yourself, be awesome and take your lumps and take those challenges as opportunities and grow from them and face your fears and stop blaming everybody for your fucking problems. And that's, unfortunately, it's all opposite. We're seeing this now as tolerance and acceptance and, you know, holding people accountable, and it's all, everyone needs to be equal, and it's just, it's all nonsense. So in order to get to what you're talking about, where people actually acknowledge that, is tricky, because it's, again, all those tentacles of control are, you know, influencing them and telling them, you know, you're unhappy and that's okay, and let's solve all the things that are making you unhappy first, and then you'll feel better, and in the meantime, here's a pill that you can swallow that'll, you know, maybe not make you so sad all the time. So I keep hoping for some, you know, radical shift, and maybe there is one. I mean, I certainly know that through my own experience, the more I step into this and the more I really embrace my role as someone who is helping, the people that are in my life, I'm surrounded by people that are either fully woke or waking up. So to me, the awakening is like right there in my face. It's everywhere. Everyone I meet is awake. And yet it still seems like the majority of people are still, you know, taking the bait. But maybe that's because they're the part that they're the ones who are getting the most airtime on television. I can't tell.
Well, you know, it's, we were talking about gatekeeping. All right. Now, anybody who becomes brilliant at what they do, by nature, becomes a gatekeeper within that thing. So if you become a really good journalist and somebody sends you a bullshit story, you become a gatekeeper and you're like, I'm not sharing that with my audience. You know, that's the kind of natural thing. The unpowerful become the powerful, then they become the oppressors and the controllers, and then other people oppose them and blah, 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 but then they learn that, oh, okay, there's a reason for this. And I was thinking yesterday is that if this world is so fucked up and full of so many fucked up people, the worst fucking advice you can ever give anyone, and the left is very, very guilty of this, going, you're perfect as you are. Fuck off! You are not fucking perfect. You're a fallible, flawed, human fucking being, first and foremost. And yes, Anybody who denies this is fucking retarded.
Yep. Yep, exactly. I mean, that's my whole problem with, it's just a minefield, because I try to have like an objective, rational discussion about something, and say like trans rights or just transgender in general, and just by being objective about it, by approaching the conversation neutrally, I'm seen as lacking compassion because I'm not caught up in my feelings about it, which is just crazy. But my whole point is, why are we telling kids that they can change in order to make themselves feel better? First of all, they're children, instead of empowering them to be excited about who they already are. Like, you are one of a kind and you are awesome. Excel at you. Instead of saying, oh, you don't feel like a boy today? Well, guess what? We have a pill for you and here's some surgery and you'll take hormones for the rest of your life and you'll be a girl. That's just like you think you want right now. So we're encouraging this change rather than acceptance of who one is and how to be the best, most maximized version of that, of yourself. It's all, oh, you can be better if you take this medicine and if you start wearing these clothes and if you start this, you know, lifelong process of transition. And it's just fucking insane. And by me just trying to bring up those simple points, and it's nothing against trans people, whatever. I wish them the best, and I hope that they're, you know, they don't kill themselves like a lot of people do after they get their trans surgery. But, you know, by just wanting to talk about it as a way of solving a problem rather than, you know, I don't know, acquiescing to the popular belief is a challenge.
Well, I saw this great video, and there was this young boy, and his parents had had a little girl, and when he was about 5 years old, and he started dressing in girls' clothes and started trying to do a higher voice and started playing with makeup and all of that kind of stuff, and they're like, "That's weird. He never did that before." and they took him to a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist was like, "Okay, when did this start happening?" And they go, "Oh, da 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 da. Okay, well, there are any big changes in his life then?" And they go, "Yeah, we had a daughter." And he goes, "Okay, did you stop paying attention to your son at that time when you had a daughter? Because, you know, she's a new baby and she needs all that extra attention." And they're like, Yeah. "Maybe your boy's confusing you not giving him attention with him being a boy, all right?" Mm. "And he's trying to be a girl because he thinks that's how he's going to get the attention and love from his parents." And they go, "Right. Oh. And then they went back and they started paying more attention to him. And within maybe, it was less than 30 days, he stopped doing all of those behaviors and became a normal little boy again. Now, another couple could have gone to a different doctor who wasn't perhaps as good. And just remember, ladies and gentlemen, all doctors are not equal. Some of them get 50% on the exam and pass. Some of them get 100% and pass. Same difference as far as you, the general public, is concerned. They're not all the same. Some of them are fuckwits. Okay? Imagine that. Some lawyers, some doctors, some people who are highly educated, the leaders of your society, are actually dumber than two pieces of shit duct taped together. Okay? Now, that's pretty fucking dumb, because how would you duct tape the shit together without getting it on your hands? How would it stick? It's just confusing. Now, but my point in this is, if you look to authority figures as all being equal, as always being correct, you'll undoubtedly get led down garden paths. But if you think to yourself that I cannot make decisions in my life unless I fully understand those decisions, then the likelihood that you're going to go too far awry is dramatically reduced. Now, what SSRI drugs and Facebook and television and all of this kind of stuff do, the effect on the brain, it reduces your impulse control, your ability to make well-thought-out decisions. What's the vast majority of the US population currently on? Psychiatric medications, television, and social media. How good are the American public's voting decisions? How good are the American public's health decisions? How good are the American public's any fucking decisions at the moment? Pretty terrible. So it comes down to that spirit of individualism. It is not the collective that's going to save America. It is the individuals. It wasn't all the Indians that saved India from the British. It was Gandhi. Organize. Have a fucking strategy. Because I was looking at, what was it, the yellow vests and all of that kind of stuff. Okay, what's the strategy here? Well, we're going to mill around in little business districts and so local businesses can't open or earn any money. Anything else? Well, we're going to burn some locals' cars as well. Okay. Anything else? Well, we're going to get shot with water cannons and rubber bullets and tasered and pepper sprayed and what have you. This is your entire tactic? You don't have any targets? Like targets of opportunity, for example? Have you stalked Macron's family 24 hours a day with your thousands upon thousands of yellow vests? Pretty sure Macron would fucking step down from his position and somebody else would want to take his place really, really quickly. And then they'd start to realize that whoever's in charge, whoever the face that is leading everybody is, they won't experience any consequences. Their family will. All right? And most people care more about their families than they do about the general public. So if you just go after and harass the families of these evil people, those evil people will stop doing what they're doing in a large part because they're so frightened of what they stand to lose in their homes. Now, this is a horrible thing to do, but this is a tactic that has worked and does work. Every single time somebody who's come out against the New World Order, do they necessarily attack that one person, or do they attack their family? Is it their family that feels the shame and wants to kind of like cast them out because they're afraid of possible consequences onto them and their life? Yes. It's the same reason why hardly any of my family talk to me. It's the same reason why you got disowned. Okay? It's because they're fucking afraid. They haven't figured out who they are yet, and they forgot who we were at the same time.
True. True. Absolutely. Yeah, they've lost sight. Yeah, man. That was a good example.
Sorry to bring that on a little bit of a downer there, bro. Well,
oh, no, it's all good. I'm trying to organize my thoughts regarding what you just said and what we were just talking about. I think we should be exploring why these trans people are becoming more and more abundant. Like, why aren't we looking at why gender dysmorphia is happening? Like, how, instead of just making us accept all this nonsense, like accept it without having any questions, why, like you said, like the SSRIs, why aren't we looking into the factors that may be causing children to be confused about their gender? We should be analyzing, we should be looking at it like as a curiosity, thinking, okay, well, this is interesting. A lot of people are seemingly confused. Why? Why are they so confused? But of course, I mean, to expect any sort of rational approach to or logical approach towards figuring out a problem in mainstream society is like expecting, you know, the sky to rain down chocolate on me tomorrow. So it's also backwards. Everything is always exactly backwards than what it should be. You know, that's basically how I decipher the Matrix, is by accepting what I'm being told and what the official version of something is, and then saying, okay, well, what's the opposite of that? Okay, there's the truth. You know,
I think that's not entirely dissimilar to how Yuri Bezmenov, and thank you, Polly B, in the chat for providing that link. I've just popped it into your Skype chat there. We'll for perusal later. I love my listeners, man. In fact, I just want to take just time out here just for 2 seconds. This morning, one of my listeners, Rodrigo, sent me a picture of my website saying, this website is blocked. It may be trying to steal your private information. And I was like, oh my God, what the hell's going on? So I posted that on Facebook and I asked my listenership, what's going on? 3 correct answers that totally solved the problem instantaneously came in immediately. All right. And I was just like, whoa. I've actually got a listener base of people who can think and actually care. And when I ask a question and I ask for help, they actually do something for me. And I just want to say, ladies and gentlemen, thank you. All right. I'm very, very grateful for each and every one of you, for the people who share the links, for people who give those guest suggestions and all of that. I particularly want to thank all my Patreons and the people who are giving those monthly and weekly payments into the Kiwi Bank and PayPal, that kind of thing. You're the ones who keep the show running. All right. Make no mistake about it. I'm running the levers and the gears and the wheels and everything like that. But you're the curtain, ladies and gentlemen, that conceals me from the consequences of my actions. The consequence of my action is doing something good for humanity, and as a direct result, I don't get paid directly by anybody. Like, you know, seriously, go up to a big corporation, Disney Corporation, I want to make some movies that really inspire people, make them think about shit, and make them change their lives and turn them into wellsprings of power and strength so that they can lead their families and their country into a better tomorrow. Would you give me millions of dollars to do this? No. What's in it for us? And then you ask the same public on the other hand. Hey, guys, you see a whole bunch of shit wrong with society? Yeah? You see people who are doing something about it? Yeah? Give a tiny little bit of what you have to help those people keep doing something about it. There's so many who come out of the woodwork and just go, hey, everybody, start supporting me because I'm about to start doing something, or I have this plan for something, or blah, 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 blah. And you've got no fucking track record, no evidence whatsoever that you're actually gonna do anything. It's all based on this fucking vague hope. And I see people like this. I think it was Wake Up New Zealand. In fact, there's a Facebook page here. No original content. Been around for 10 years. And the only thing they ever did was share mainstream news articles. with a mainstream consciousness. And their page is called Wake Up New Zealand. And I thought to myself, how arrogant is it to believe one is woke by only reading the media of those who are trying to keep you fucking asleep? And it's the same goddamn thing with everybody. We've become so shallow and vacant in what it is that we listen to and the reasons why we do it that we don't even care about the consequences of our actions anymore. There's some people who give me $200 or something like that, and they don't realize that that bought me an entire week of not stressing out about food. And in that week, I was able to make 5 2-hour radio shows as a direct result of just that one little donation there, that kind of thing, which is not millions of dollars. But even though the production value and things of that nature for this show can cost tens of thousands, there is tens of thousands of dollars of equipment that has been donated over the last decade that has paid for all this apparatus that the listeners are watching now. The green screen backdrops, all of this kind of stuff was time and effort on my part and resources on the part of my listenership. And so I just wanted to take that time out, ladies and gentlemen, to say thank you. Thank you very much for letting me be who I am and do what I think is right. Sorry, man, I just had to get that out.
No, man, Mo, you everything you said I could also say for what I do. And also, speaking of equipment, has my sound been all right this whole time? I realized about 20 minutes ago that I haven't been using a mic. I've just been using whatever mic is coming through the computer. So does it sound all right?
Yeah, I guess.
I have good microphones. I just didn't think to plug one in for this call. I don't know what happened. I'm totally spaced. But
No. That's the same thing happened to me yesterday, bro. I was on a call with Dave Kelso of PSEC, and I think it was maybe about 5 minutes into the interview that I realized that my microphone was off. On the live stream, so that nobody on the live stream could hear what I was saying, but the people in the Skype could hear what I was saying, kind of thing. It's just like, fucking idiot, Vinny. But I was just so lucky that again, I had this the live chat open for people to give me that sort of pointer. Hey, Vinny, your microphone's off. Vinny! That kind of thing. We've just received...
I do have good mics. I just don't have them. They're in my camera bag. If I ran and got him, but I don't know if it's worth it at this point or not.
She's all good, bro. And I also want to thank Contrast Viz in the chat room as well for that $5 super chat he just popped in. Thank you, brother. I love that. Instant results. You see, that's what the live format is supposed to really be about, I think, and it makes it a lot more exciting. And it's good, I think, because one problem I've been having lately, I mean, I'm not sure if you get this or if other talk radio show hosts do, because I've got my phone numbers on my website. So occasionally I'll get calls from people who are like, hey, Vinny, I've got some information to share with you and all of this kind of stuff. Do you mind if I send you freaking tomes of blah, 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 blah? Fuck no, I don't give a shit. Fuck off, cunt. You know, this is my life. I'm trying to just do my job here and all of that kind of stuff. And I realized something like just in that thought process, like, oh, that's why people who get power over others turn into dicks, because they think that others are not entitled to that power. And I recalled to what was a documentary called, The People versus George Lucas, and the Star Wars films changed when they did those special editions, those re-edits, and then they deleted the originals so that nobody could get them except from the Laserdisc versions. You know, this is where the Han shot first meme came from. And what the point of the filmmaker was saying, and the reason why people hated George Lucas so much, is because he tried to alter the artwork that had changed public consciousness. And they said, you can't do that, because as soon as you put an artwork into the public consciousness, it becomes part of the public consciousness. It is not yours anymore. And I think that's the same is true of us in the truth movement. A lot of our content doesn't really belong to us anymore. It actually belongs to the ether and everybody who lives within this realm, you know?
Yeah, and I don't know about you, but we've been having more threats than usual from YouTube and from Facebook, and there's been definitely we're a little bit more, I don't know, I'm on my toes more about what I can say that will be accepted or what might be something that gets us taken down forever. It's an interesting time for that.
It's actually quite frightening because a lot of articles have come out recently saying that they're going to blacklist all conspiracy videos.
I know. And my main character on the channel is the conspiracy guy. So there's no way to hide from that algorithm.
For fuck's sake.
I don't know what I'm going to do. I know, man. I don't know what I'm going to do. That's my livelihood.
Why don't you just become the everything as it appears guy?
Yeah, the coincidence guy. Don't worry, go back to sleep. Everything's fine. The government has your best interest at heart guy.
Is he telling the truth or is he telling a lie?
A lie.
It's a coincidence guy.
Yeah.
I love those ones as well. I think, what was the last video I watched of yours? It's when you were texting about Q via social via social media to your friend who was in the next room. Fuck, that was funny, man.
Thanks, man.
Well, I was just thinking as well is that I haven't actually studied into Q or the flat Earth.
Me either. Oh,
because... Because they immediately stamp out at me as like, wait a sec, interesting, sure. Even in a desert of lies may yield a grain of truth. But in my day-to-day existence, what practical benefit does this have to me? Vaccines, I study into those. I see immediate practical benefits from that because I know you don't take them. Tell your friends about them so that they don't get their kids autism and shit like that. Real practical benefit, real knowledge. And I was thinking, okay, now, how do I apply QAnon into my daily existence? I got nothing. How to apply the flat Earth into my daily existence? I got nothing. All right, because the reason for it is because both those movements exist for one reason and one reason only. Spread our message. That's the only reason. Here's our message, spread it for us. I mean, fuck, they're turning the whole goddamn truth movement into an advertising company.
Yeah, and I'm just so sick of division of any kind, and I just monitor it all. I mean, I take it in as information. I think the Q stuff is kind of interesting. I think it would be... I'm not taking a side with it. I'm not saying it's 100% authentic. I'm not saying it's 100% contrived. And there's always someone to will rebuke that and say, well, it is 100% contrived. And I say, prove it. And they can't. But same goes for it being real. You can't prove it. It's just worth, I don't know, sort of, I don't even monitor it that much, but it's like, oh, it's there. I'm kind of curious. It would be very awesome if some of the stuff that Q says came true. I would tip my hat and say, well done.
Many things they've said have come true, right?
Sort of, I guess. I mean, I'd like to see Hillary Clinton in handcuffs. That would be pretty sweet. I'd be pretty content about that.
Yeah. However, just like with the yellow vest, and I was remember that 10-year that 10-year period of what's it called, the fucking deja vu, going on. Does anybody remember Occupy Movement? What happened there? A whole bunch of people got their hopes up, they didn't implement any real strategies, and then they eventually got crushed by a totalitarian government who just packed them up and nobody defended themselves. Okay?
Yep.
What's going to happen here? Same fucking thing. It's a pressure release valve, in my opinion. The public will deal with about 10 years of constant anxiety and constant failure before they need to be given the appearance of a victory. And if they given the appearance of a victory, the appearance of victory is victory to the unthinking mind, and they stop fighting, just like everybody who elected Obama immediately sat back.
Yep, exactly. The Occupy, I remember being just as frustrated about Occupy back then. I mean, it was so obvious. It was like people sitting in the streets and saying, "We don't like these rules, so we want you to give us better rules." Sure, you got it. They're, you know, "We don't like these chains. They're a bit uncomfortable. We want some new chains." Okay, here you go. Here's some new chains. Yay, we won! No, you didn't win anything. You're still just a slave.
Yep. You got
Occupy. You actually just lost out on a couple weeks of work, so you're actually poorer than you were before.
Yeah. And then they'll go, "Oh, but it's less money to the bankers. It's also less money for you." You fuck. There's a whole gamut of things that actually intersect, right? That's complex thinking. Now, I think it was, I'm not sure if it was J. Edward Griffin or somebody else, but they say that if you do not understand, oh, it was David Icke, actually, when he was working for the BBC, he'd be interviewing these dudes, these intellectuals, you know, so to speak. Now, how you know somebody is an intellectual is they'll say a whole bunch of really, really long words that are very, very difficult, convoluted, full of misunderstandings and conjecture. And what's problematic about that is if you don't understand what they're talking about, and then ask them to explain, perhaps in shorter words, you know, just assume that I'm not that bright, mate, okay? And just explain it to me simply as though I'm a member of the general public. They can't. And the reason why they cannot is because they don't actually understand what it is they're talking about. And this is what the trivium was meant to be taught into people, and hasn't been really been taught in school since, like, 1880s or some shit. Who, what, when, where, why, how? Nowadays, those are called journalistic questions. You ask those questions of any fucking topic, you will suddenly get a shitload of information that allows you to understand the topic. Now, the reason it's called a trivium is because that's the first stage, okay? That's your grammar. That's how you get all the facts of the equation together. The second stage is understanding. Okay, we've got all the facts of the equation. Now we need to understand them. Third stage is you understand the problem. You can now teach it to others. That is our entire goal in life, ladies and gentlemen, period. Look at what you're fucking interested in, fully understand it, and then allow others to understand it too. And then your accumulated knowledge benefits the entire human race forever. Knowledge cannot be destroyed. It can be occulted. It can be secreted away for discovery later. But if you accumulate knowledge, understand it, and spread it, that is the point of your existence.
Yeah. Dumb down. That's like, I mean, again, that's why it's so hard to have a rational argument, because it's now you're required to bring some emotional investment, your feelings into it, for people to think you care. So being objective and just using facts and being neutral is seen as not having compassion and not having sympathy, which is so frustrating in a conversation, because then they dismiss you. They'll say, "You don't care. I don't want to talk to you. I can't talk. I can't deal with this. I can't talk to you right now. I can't believe you feel this way." Like, well, you could if you listened, we could get maybe on a common ground, because you'd hear that I'm not saying that anybody deserves anything less than anybody else, but there's just more ways to approach the situation and more perspectives to be had. And the moment we lose perspective, we lose, because you need to be able to have multiple points of view on something in order to fully understand it, like you're saying. And that is a trivium. It's getting it all the information so that we can figure it out. And when you're only getting one side of the equation, one aspect, and the media is telling you to not only disregard the rest but make it illegal, you got to start thinking about what's going on here. If one narrative is allowed, it's a scary precedent to set. And what are you really getting behind if you're only behind what the television is telling you to think? Yeah, scary times.
I do think the word scary times, it is only now that I have actually felt real fear about what I'm doing for a living. Only now.
I know, man.
The last 10 years, nothing. No problem whatsoever. But now, It's fucking scary, man, that people are going crazy out there. I mean, I remember Alex Jones when I was first getting into this stuff, going all nuts and blah, 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 blah. And then I calmed down a bit and I realized this guy's freaking nuts and he's just doing it for the entertainment value to get a bigger audience, and because that's a hell of a lot more entertaining to see someone yelling and screaming and going around and shit like that. But the information doesn't come across, the emotion does. And that's what people are hooked into. They're hooked into the emotion, not the information. And as a species, essentially, we're being directed down this, hey, your emotions are more important than facts and evidence. And I think this is why men overwhelmingly are committing suicide. Because facts, logic, this is a male territory. This is the thing that actually makes us tick. We love facts. We love logic. We love information. Women love feelings. They love overall pictures. They like colors and things like that. We like black and fucking white. And at the moment, the black and white, real and not real, that's becoming gray. The information that could be proven is now becoming disinformation, misinformation. Right. So all the things that actually define the male mind in a healthy function is fucking being destroyed. And as a result, well, what are we like? 87% of the suicides are male. Because we don't feel like we have any value anymore in this society. And I think David Icke and a number of Sargon of Akkad, they've been doing these great videos about the destruction of masculinity, the destruction of testosterone. They want to give all that testosterone to the women and give all the estrogen to the men so that we become fucking androgynous, that there's no goddamn difference between us. And the whole reason why the human race became so brilliant and were capable of inventing all these amazing things is because while the guys were dealing with all the facts and figures and shit like that, the women were at home making sure that all the general fucking stuff was working. You know, do you need your coffee, baby? Oh, we need to take care of the kids and everything like that. And you'll remind the guy, you got to do this and you got to do that. And you go, oh, okay, fuck, we're actually part of a partnership. And that's why relationships work so well when you're doing something productive, is because one side sees what the other doesn't. And if they're openly communicating and in agreement with what their actual goals are, you have beautiful relationships that are incredibly productive and very supportive. But if you don't fucking have that, everybody's at each other's throats, being promiscuous and being a gun. All right, that's basically it.
Right. Yeah. The mainstream now shames women if they are a stay-at-home mom. I mean, the feminism movement is so, they talk about toxic masculinity a lot. Well, I think feminism is toxic femininity. Absolutely. And it's all just one big trick. Tricking women into joining the workforce so they become wage slaves as well. And then they're taxpayers, so they're also now paying taxes. And it takes them out of the home, away from the children, so that the children are now raised completely by the government schooling. And teaching women that it's empowering to focus on your career rather than finding a good man to have a relationship with and then grow a family with. Like, that's somehow outdated and, you know, simple-minded and reserved for only Republicans. I mean, it's just it's chaos. I mean, I think that this whole idea that they're, you know, this idea they're trying to push that there's more than two genders, that's the equivalent of what 1984 says in the 2 + 2 = 5, how you can just change the definition. It's that in reality, by saying, no, there's more than two genders. And people believing that, that's like telling people 2 + 2 = 5. You thought it was 4, but it's actually 5. It's that level of mind control. But yeah. The destruction of the male, blaming everything on men as if the problem has always just been men and we're just now waking up to it. Oh, not only men, but white men. Oh, all these white men. Oh my gosh, that's why everything's so fucked up, because of white men. Figured it out. Great, now back to my job and watching TV and figured it all out. All I have to do is hate men and everything's going to be okay. Yeah, it's fucking crazy.
Well, the insanity of it, I think, is a purposeful thing, because if you can turn a society crazy, what kind of a threat are they to people who have occult knowledge, right, who believe facts matter, all right? Because just thinking about this, I love sci-fi. For one reason specifically, I like to see where society is being programmed, okay? Where are we being programmed to go? And it's always war. It's always invasion. It's always enslavement. It's always technology being used against those who don't have it. okay?
Yep.
That is the sci-fi par excellence that we are going to be living under. There won't be no facts. There won't be no reality. The only thing there will be is entertainment and how much you feel about something. Somebody actually said on a thread to me the other day, and I fucking nearly pissed in my own mouth with my dick. It was just orangutanian. It was, fuck, They said, oh, what? Everybody's feelings and opinions are valid. And I said, no, they're fucking not. If you see a woman breastfeeding a baby and you're disgusted by that, your feelings are not fucking valid at all. You are brainwashed and there's something fucking wrong with you. If you think and you say it's a fact that vaccines got rid of polio when you don't know what plumbing is or waterborne diseases and how fucking plumbing got the fuck rid of them, then you're wrong, okay? People's opinions and feelings are often wrong, and I think that's the most important thing that we all have to recognize to ourselves. What am I feeling? What am I feeling? Is there anything to actually substantiate what I'm feeling? Oh, no, there isn't. Ah, I'm having a reptilian brain response. I'm not actually doing any fucking thinking right now. Let's do something different, shall we? Let's actually work shit out for a change. Might be a better idea.
Yeah, man, I hear ya. I went to a local poetry slam here last week just to kind of check it out, because people are always encouraging me to go do my poetry at places like that, because I reserve it for these events that I get invited to. I don't really go to poetry nights because I kind of hate poetry, frankly. And this really validated that opinion, because I went there and the first thing the girl who was hosting it said is, when she was talking to the poets, she's like, pronouns? So she could find out what pronoun to address people as when they went up there. But what really upset me is that, in fact, the next poem I want to write is Poetry is Dead. Because for them, the definition of poetry is just putting your feelings on a piece of paper and talking in front of a microphone with no structure, with no rhythm, with no message, with no bigger ideas. Just, I have bulimia and it's your fault, Dad. I make myself throw up. My teeth are bad, but I'm getting better. Like, that's not poetry. That is abuse of the word poem. So we're having this like attack on, it's like someone who would go up there and saying, I'm a singer, and then hit every wrong note, and people clap, saying, well, at least they're up there doing it. No, they suck, and there has to be some accountability. It's all feelings. Even the girl who hosted it said that, like, well, you know, they're putting their feelings in the line here. It's like, I don't give a fuck if they're putting their feelings in the line if it's not good poetry. Give me something good. Yeah, good for them for getting over the fear of standing in front of a crowd, I guess, but other than that, you're an insult to what poetry has been established as up until this point. Like, go home, read some Edgar Allan Poe, read some Walt Whitman, read some Ralph Waldo Emerson, and come back, and then maybe, you know, let's talk about what you think poetry is, because it's you're embarrassing yourself. But meanwhile, everyone in the room is like, great, that was great. I'm like, no, come on. Just because they're emotional and they're talking about their feelings doesn't mean they deserve applause. Anyway. Sorry. Well, yeah, that's a personal anecdote, but fuck, man.
No, that's
so frustrating. Right.
Well, the way we understand the world is through personal anecdotes, because that's the way that our understandings become solidified. And if we do not see evidence within the real world for our thoughts and our feelings, it means that our thoughts and our feelings are fucking wrong. But if you go out with a thought and a feeling and you see confirmation every fucking where you look, people are retarded, people are sheeple, people are brainwashed, the arts are fucking being destroyed because the art is the fucking boundaries of our imagination, and if you destroy that, people are easier to control. If that's your fucking realization, you will see umpteen evidence for that shit. And you're talking about poetry and that kind of thing, and I just want to actually play a clip here. It's from Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, the 1950s version, and it's towards the end. John Savage has been reading Shakespeare. Okay, he's in the Savage Reservation. He's not in the tightly controlled cities where everybody's doped up on soma and decanted from tubes and things like that. He grew up in the savage land and was brought to this place. And he sees that all the things that he used to live with have been done away with. And this is the final conversation. It's about 57 seconds or so. The final conversation between the hero and the villain of the story, who controlled it. And when I first heard this, I kind of like burst into tears because I was feeling really emotional at the time about, you know, a generalized feeling of human sorrow and how it is inherently our ties to this world. Our emotions are real. They're supposed to motivate us to do something. And if you think the emotion in and of itself is the achievement, you're fucking retarded. So I'll just play this clip now. It's about 58 seconds. I'll just see if I can get that running. Here we are. 3, 2, 1. There we go.
I don't want comfort.
Then what do you want? Unpleasantness? Suffering? Pain?
Yes, I want all of that. And all of the things you've done away with. I want danger, I want poverty, I want goodness, I want sin, I want freedom.
Oh, sorry. One second.
I don't want comfort.
Then what do you want? Unpleasantness? Suffering? Pain?
Yes, I want all of that. And all of the things you've done away with. I want danger, I want poetry, I want goodness, I want sin, I want freedom.
Put more directly, what you are really saying is that you claim the right to be unhappy.
All right, then. I claim the right to be unhappy.
But that also means the right to be sick, to be crippled, to be insane, the right to grow old and ugly and wrinkled, the right to protect yourself from violence, the right to kill or be killed, the right to have too little to eat.
And the right to hope, to love.
Yes, even the right to fall in love and then be spurned, betrayed, left racked with pain and jealousy. Is all of that really what you want, Mr. Savage?
That's exactly what I want. I claim all of it.
So that's that, and the realization therein, or at least for me it was, is that it is the real experiences we have, the real pains that we feel, that in fact define us. And when we try to stay away from the poetry, when we try to stay away from danger, when we try and stay away from our emotions being hurt, we are no longer human, and everything that it is that defines us simply evaporates into nothingness. That's why our pain is so important. That's why it's so hard to forget the bad things that happen to us, ladies and gentlemen, and why it's so easy to forget the good times. Because you don't need to repeat those bad times. Your brain reminds you not to do that. And that's why you have to live every day good. Do something nice. But accept the pain and the fear and the frustration that you feel, for to ignore them is to lose the very essence of being human.
Yeah, and it's all, everything is all an opportunity. I mean, if I were to teach some sort of like life coach or life success class, I would say you must be able to transmute everything into, as much as you can, into something uplifting for yourself. And every challenge is an opportunity, as hard as it is to find sometimes. It is, it's all there for us to learn from and to grow from and to experience. I mean, when I was in my 20s and I was getting my heart broken by various females and I was crushed for months, even years at a time, I thought, you know, why am I getting this punishment? But in retrospect, I had to experience that so I'd be able to love my current girlfriend and partner the way I do now. You know, everything happens in a way that can be utilized in a way to make our lives better, as hard as it can be. I mean, hard as it is, as challenging as something is, there is opportunity for growth within it. And just like you said, the feelings being the achievement, no way. What the feelings can then produce, that's the achievement. You know, what can you do with that? I mean, the advice I had for, because I only went to this poetry night because, I knew one of the guys who was going to perform, and he's a young guy and he just got his heart broken, and it was a very raw piece, but he was just basically like a journal entry, and he read it out loud. And my advice for him is write all of that shit down, write it all out, keep writing all that anger, all that contempt you're having against this girl, write it all out until it's out of you, and then move it aside and then write a poem, you know? Get it out of your system first. Like, just whatever you need to say about it, say it. But that's not the poetry. The poetry will come from you purging all of that and then maybe being able to structure something within it or from it that is better for the audience, but also healthier for you as an artist. So it's not just verbal diarrhea. Now it's something structured because you've had the opportunity, because you've allowed yourself to release that valve to dump all the shit out, and now you can maybe do something constructive with it. And also probably forgive the girl, because I don't think she was probably that as bad as outlined in the poem.
Well, one can only hope. Well, in fact, we were talking about feminism and stuff like that before. I came up with a great joke yesterday. It's like, feminist, stop complaining. Be a man.
That's actually just really good.
I mean, that's what you want to be, isn't it? Just fucking do it. Oh, you can't, can you? Oh, right. Maybe that's the reason why there's a problem with your movement, is because the one thing you want to be is the one thing you cannot be. And I think maybe Hollywood is partly responsible for giving us unrealistic dreams and desires. Like that speech from Tyler Durden, one day we'd all believe we'd be movie gods and rock stars, but we won't. And we're slowly realizing that fact. And we're very, very pissed off. Now, as a direct result of everybody being very pissed off, they realize, hey, you need new dreams. Okay, well, you can be a YouTube star now, or you can have your own podcast, or this kind of thing. And it reminds me of Fahrenheit 451, whereby the television would actually speak to the person watching it. Oh, how are you doing today? You know, that kind of thing. Even right now, ladies and gentlemen, when you're interacting in the chat room and things like that, you could be interacting with your families. You could be doing something slightly more important than listening to this radio show. Now, I hate to say that to you, ladies and gentlemen, because part of me fears that you will just turn this radio show off, stop listening, and that kind of thing, and that it'll cost me financially, or it'll cost me hits or something like that. Tiny little bit of my brain says that when I tell people this. But unfortunately, I must say it because it is the truth, and that people won't benefit if they do not hear it. Now, your microphones are picking up a lot of background noise there.
Oh, really? I just put on the USB mics.
It's just up a little bit high. I think maybe turn the sensitivity. Oh, no, it's fine now.
No, it's probably because I have the heater on in here, and before, this is a better mic, so it's probably picking up the sound better, whereas before. So if I unplug it.
No, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It was only just I heard something in the background for a second there, but it's gone now, so it's all good. All right.
It's 20 degrees here. I'm cold, but I can turn the heater off. I do have my beanie on and a scarf.
No,
so I should be fine.
Keep that motherfucker on.
Okay. Fair. You don't want to see what's going on in here anyway. There's a lot of. There's a lot going on underneath that beanie.
Yeah. Well, what was I doing? In fact, I was going to put on my brother's hat. I'll just go show you. In fact.
Your hair's changed since last time we spoke. You can't hear me. Maybe someone can. You look like your younger brother now.
Well, I know. It's funny, isn't it? You know, and then my older brother gave this to me, so
that's funny. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's like I heard this story about those World War II people. You know how John Woo made that movie Wind Talkers, and the reason why they had those what are they called, Native American trackers and things like that in World War II is because of their gift. They could see trails, they could sense things and that kind of thing. Now, yep. When they brought them into basic training, they cut all their hair off, just like all the fresh recruits. Now, they turn them into one with everybody else. Essentially, they rob you of your individuality in physical form. They notice that directly after their hair was cut off, their ability to read the trails disappeared with their hair.
I've heard that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this longer hair that I've got now, I used to have it short and stuff like that. This is actually a genetic antenna. It's called a fractal antenna. Your genetic code, much like an aerial, is done in a coil like this, in a double helix, goes round and round and up and down. The longer your hair is, the more metaphysical clues you can download from the universe, essentially the bigger transmitter. And I think and suddenly Rastafarianism makes a lot more sense now. Extremely long, these guys with these extremely long dreadlocks who are trying to get closer to Jah. And I wonder as well, Is this I just wonder, is my emotions or any of my thoughts or anything like that, are they becoming deeper or stronger because my hair is longer? Or does it take training? Does it take an upbringing or something like that? What are the other complicating factors there? But I'm just growing my hair, basically, because I'm too lazy to get a haircut.
Well, I'm in a similar boat, but I've heard that same story about the Indians, too, and it's cool, if nothing else. And mine is more of a rebellion against Hollywood, I think, because when I was living in Los Angeles, you know, I was an actor, and everyone is always trying to define you for you when you're there and trying to be, they're like, well, you're this type and you look like this, so you should look like this and, you know, play up this part of yourself so you can get cast as this. So I had to keep my hair short because I was constantly trying to be some version of myself that my agents thought would be sellable. So by me leaving LA, it's like a big fuck you towards that. And I'm just seeing what, I'm also 35 and I'm not bald. So I'm just curious to see what long, luscious locks will look like. Because I've never done it before, you know? And maybe it'll make me smarter. Because I also say that my clarity has become a lot more sharp since leaving California. Something about being away from that energy is making things much like rapid. My awakening is accelerated even further being away from California. So maybe it's the hair.
Who knows? It might be. And I think maybe a lot of us do have it. It's like one of those factors. So like if you get your hair cut and stuff like that, but you're relying on it or what, Let me back up a little bit for a second.
Yeah,
because it's like I live in a environment where I'm pretty much alone the vast majority of the time. I mean, even though you and I are speaking right now, even though we have the listeners commenting in the chat room, physically I'm alone right now, and so all the inputs that I get are more or less digital. So what my life has become is essentially a data diviner. You're trying to get all of this fucking non-physical data into my brain so that I can understand it and figure it out. Because the job of a journalist, essentially, above all others, is not only to just understand a topic, but to be able to explain it in context to somebody who doesn't know anything about it. Right? And my ability to do this has become so much better over the 10 years of being in radio, and that's primarily by listening, not by talking.
Exactly. Yeah, couldn't agree more.
And this Acapulco that you're going to, what date is that, by the way?
It's the 14th through the 14th through the 17th is the main conference. I mean, they're having little events before and after the big one, but the main days of the conference are 14, 15, 16, 17 in Mexico.
Oh, okay. So it's within a week or two.
It's next. Yeah, next. I'm flying out there on. Actually, I haven't bought my ticket yet, but I'm flying out there on Tuesday. It looks like Tuesday. I'll be there for a little over a week, and I'm actually having mixed feelings about the whole thing. I don't know if I really. I don't know. It's been a. This one hasn't felt as much like a slam dunk as years past, but I'm hoping it'll all come together and it'll be awesome. I just don't feel like traveling all the way down to Mexico, to be honest. I just got back from Australia, where I was. I spent 2 weeks with Max at his place, and which was awesome. And, you know, since my girlfriend and I were doing real estate stuff here, we have a house that we're currently rehabbing, and it requires some attention. So getting to Acapulco is a pain in the ass. Like, there's no easy way to get there. So maybe I'm just being stubborn because I think the experience is always great. So once I'm there, it'll feel great. But yeah, I'm just being a little bitch about it.
I think it's the cold, bro. I think it's the cold. No, seriously, probably. It demotivates you fucking in every way.
Oh, fair enough. And this is my first winter in 20 years because I've been in Southern California for so long. So being up here, I mean, it's probably not even that cold out, but I'm like all bundled up because I'm used to, you know, I'm used to nice, warm weather this time of year in Los Angeles, and I'm getting snow for the first time since I was a young teenager. So then maybe I hope you're right, because you're right. When I even saying this out loud, I'm like, why am I even saying this? Because I have nothing to complain about. I have everything to look forward to, really.
So I bring out
the travel part. The travel part is a pain in the ass, and Mexico is not, I don't like the climate and people love it. I don't like humidity. So I'm just being a little bitch, but come to Acapulco and see me perform, because it'll be great.
Yeah. Well, the other element on this is, when you get depressed during the winter, it's an all-encompassing fucking thing. I mean, I lived in Dunedin, and it's a Scottish word for Edinburgh. Now, one of my mates used to live in Edinburgh, and one time his toilet was frozen. Like, the water in the toilet in his flat was actually frozen, okay? Now, okay. That's cold. Now, and when I went to Dunedin, we had a weatherboard missing on the front of the house, so essentially the wind could just go straight into it. We were on the wrong side of the street, so we got about 30 minutes of sunshine per day in the very start of the day when the sun's at its weakest. We had mushrooms growing out of the wood in the side of the house. We had the bathroom ceiling completely covered in black mold. And we burned 30 kilos of coal one time, and it managed to keep one room warm for 3 hours, and then it got freezing again. It was on average 5 degrees colder inside the house than out, and it snowed once while we were there. Once. We made a big snowman, we put him on the front lawn, and there was still snow on that front lawn 6 months later.
Wow.
That's how fucking cold Dunedin is. Okay, and wow. I promised myself I would never do that again. Right, and back to Lewis Black. He was talking about he was doing a gig in Minnesota, and they say, oh well, you should come in the summers; they're exceptional. And he goes, yeah, the exception being you can move your fucking fingers and toes, and. And it's just like you live in a cold that human beings weren't supposed to live in. And it's no kind of test of the human spirit. It's fucking stupid. All right. There's these people who used to live in temperate climates, okay? A temperate climate where it would get warm on occasion. But there's people who don't like that, apparently. Nah, let's just live in the fucking ice all year round. This is a brilliant idea. Brilliant idea. Who needs fucking seasons? Not entirely dissimilar from the opposite degree of living in Southern California for 20 years and not knowing what a winter actually feels like. But now that you know, don't you appreciate what you used to have?
Yes, but I'll also say I don't dislike the weather here. I mean... People keep trying to relate to me up here, saying like, "Oh, how about this weather, huh?" I'm like, "Well, actually, it's not that bad. There's snow on the ground, and I haven't seen any snow in 20 years, so I'm not. It's fascinating. I kind of like. It's also really beautiful outside. You know, when it's snowing and it's quiet, it's beautiful. So
it's fucking magic.
I don't hate the weather, but I do wonder if maybe it is having an effect on my feelings about traveling, perhaps. That's possible, but I don't dislike the weather. It's a little cold in the trailer. Living in a travel trailer when it's freezing outside is challenging, but not impossible, and that's the good part.
Well, the travel thing, I watched one of Melissa Melton's videos from TruthStream Media the other day, and she'd fallen over days before going to the airport. And she didn't want to get in the naked body scanner and all of that kind of stuff. So she went for a pat down, and she told the person at the TSA that she had this big wound on her knee and to be very gentle and that kind of thing. And so she was very gentle on her entire body except her fucking knee. And it ripped it open. She started bleeding on the inside of her pants, right, profusely, like dripping down, that kind of shit. And she just did this video, that kind of thing. It was no editing, no nothing. She was just on the verge of tears. She looked outside and she saw the American flag flying after she just had this experience. And she thought it was just a fucking joke, like what has happened to my country.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, I mean, I opt out of that full body scanner every time. And I don't know. I used to be kind of shy about it because I thought, I don't know, they would be mad or something, but I usually apologize to them because it's always a dude. I'm always like, I'm sorry you have to do this, bro. Like, I'm sorry you have to touch my junk because I know you don't want to. But it's just amazing to see people operating on autopilot like that, and thinking they're, I don't even know what they're thinking. Like, what do they think they're actually helping? Are they actually preventing terrorism? But to hear that from Melissa, that's too bad that she got a dick employee. Female.
It was.
Female. Female employees, well, I don't know. I've never been patted down by a female at the airport because it's not allowed.
Oh, really?
I wouldn't mind it.
Well, there's no fun in that, is there? You know, the TSA just want to suck the fun out of everything.
True.
It was just like, holy shit, I haven't been on a plane that has required anything like that. I've never been to the States, and the States is the only,
wow,
the only place that has this kind of security measure. And indeed, what happens with these security measures, as the Corbett Report found out, is that they're completely fucking ineffective. Did you know that there was a test done, and people were trying to smuggle fake bombs, fake knives, fake guns, and shit like that onto the planes? About 60% of them got through. Okay,
yep.
So it's not about safety. Okay, it's about the Milgram experiments. Can you sit there and do something that you know to be wrong if an authority figure tells you? Can I pat down your little child? Can I pat down your 88-year-old grandmother veteran? You know, that kind of thing. Anybody with true moral conscience, immediately, no. Right. Now, that's what the Milgram experiments proved, is that approximately 60% of people will, if an authority figure tells them to do so, murder another human being. Okay? Wow. That's what 60% of people will do. They'll follow pretty much any order. However, they found that if you put one of those 30% of people who refuse in front of the other person who would ordinarily follow the order, and they see them refusing, the person is then far more likely to refuse themselves. And so the Milgram experiments prove two very important things. Number one, people are dangerous when they trust authorities without question. And number two, when people trust authorities without question, it only takes one person standing up to them right in front of them to inspire everybody to rebel. Beautiful.
Cool. Now, that being said, which is all accurate, take it one step further. Max Egan thinks that there might be something more sinister to the full body scanners themselves, and that they are playing they are serving a purpose in, you know, the overall picture, tying in with chemtrails and the heavy metals and you know, all the 5G and all that. And there's something about how those full body scanners possibly are scrambling aspects of our DNA when we step inside of them. So there's everything you just said, and there's a possibility that those machines are doing all bad things to our bodies as we pass through them.
Well, there's no possibility. That's a fact. It's even documented by the manufacturers themselves, and all the TSA people who've been working there for like 2-3 years or something like that are getting cancer.
Oh, right, wow.
So it's like, okay, I understand that in some cases people would think that these are normal human beings and that kind of thing. However, when you look at, say, I think Goldman Sachs was an interesting example. This might be a bit of a tangent, but it's going somewhere. So what they did is they had a Goldman Sachs employee questionnaire. Okay, now, if you know anything about psychopathy, you will notice that this questionnaire is done specifically to weed out any non-psychopaths. Will you do this? Will you not do that? Will you do this? Will you not do that? That kind of thing. And as soon as they've figured it out, then the person goes, okay, you've got the job. So when you're reading a recruitment form for the TSA, what are they looking for? Okay. Mm. Are they looking for people who are on a power trip? Are they looking for sexual predators? Are they looking for the worst scum of humanity? I think so, because those are the people who'd not only be most likely to want those jobs, but they'd be the kind of people who nobody would want in any other form of employment.
Mm-hmm. See.
just wonder about that sometimes. It's like, am I going into a thing, you know, where these people are actually decent, ordinary people and what have you, or am I going into a situation where this person's actually a psychopath who is looking for any reason they can possibly look at to torture me, hurt me, abuse me, set me up, or fuck my life up or something like that for their own pleasure. And my job going into the realm of this predator is to ensure that they cannot do that. Now, I had this fantasy, all right, and I think it might have been a Mark Passio-inspired fantasy. Those are fucking dangerous, ladies and gentlemen. going into the TSA checkpoint, and I was envisioning myself about a year from now. I've lost maybe 14 kilos in the last year or something like that. That's about maybe 40 pounds or something, so quite a bit. And I built a bit of muscle up, and I'm 6'5". Okay, so I thought to myself, what if at one point in my life I was 6'5", was packed full of muscle, and was actually trained, right? Trained to kill, so that if necessary, if somebody was trying to murder me, I could not only defend myself, but I could kill them just like that and get and have more than enough energy to kill the next 20 that were coming at me, like this fantasy of this group of socialists coming at me, and then just with one incredibly powerful punch, I knock back their leader and scare the shit out of the rest of them, and then fucking kill them all, you know, that kind of thing. These are the fucking horrific fantasies that I have, but it involved a TSA agent, and I said to them in the thought that if you touch me inappropriately, or if you hurt me, or if you violate me in any way, shape, or form, I will respond with deadly force. Now think about that. Imagine if every single American going through those checkpoints said the exact same thing. I'm here to do exactly what you want me to do, and I'm here to help you do your job easy. But if you violate me, you are going to die. That is not a threat. That is a promise, and this is totally within your hands now. Do you want to die, or do you want to live? If you want to live, do your job. If you want to die, abuse me.
Mm-hmm. I could see where that would be a Mark Passio-inspired fantasy. But I think that's one of the greatest aspects of anarchy, which, again, I don't even call myself an anarchist necessarily, because I don't like labels, but I do identify and I think that the principles of anarchy are beautiful, but the non-aggression principle is beautiful. But if someone aggresses on you, it's within your right to protect yourself and meet the level of which you're being aggressed on. So if someone is taking advantage and infringing on your free will in any way, you can stop the aggressor. That's within our right. That's within our an innate human right to be able to stand up for ourselves. So if, you know, in your scenario you just outlined, while a bit harsh, it's accurate, and that's what life should be. So if you say, you know what, sure, if you aggress upon me, I am going to retaliate and protect myself, just so you know. And you're right, if everyone did that, everything changes. I mean, that would change the paradigm in a moment, but, you know, how far away are we from that? That's it's beautiful.
Well, as that Milgram experiment example said, that it would only take one, but doing it fully in everybody else's presence and saying it loud enough, with no aggression in their voice whatsoever, respectful, regal, as though they were coming from a royal bloodline with utter respect, that kind of thing. Absolutely respect you, but if you violate me, you are going to die.
And you have to be fully prepared not to take the flight you were wanting to get on, because chances are you'd be hung up dealing with lots of people for a few hours. So make sure it's a flight that you have scheduled far in advance, that you can get to the airport really early to have the confrontation and then still make the flight.
Now, that might actually be fun. I mean, think about this. I mean, just as an experiment, theoretically, everybody's got a goddamn smartphone now. I think I watched the... I think it was Mr. Plinkett's review of Ghostbusters 2016. It's fucking funny because it was sponsored by Sony, and all of these girls are going out and filming their shit, which nowadays everybody would film on their phone. For some reason, these girls are filming their shit on Sony handycams. It's like, what the fuck? So at the moment, you could film on your phone your interactions with the TSA officers, theoretically, okay? And if you then upload that video, or in fact are actually live streaming it as you're going through the TSA checkpoint and showing people, no, I'm not going to submit, I'm going to stay within my honour, I'm not going to hurt anybody, I'm not going to threaten anybody, but this is how a free person truly behaves in this kind of authoritarian situation. It'd be an interesting experiment to see what kind of results that they would get.
Absolutely. Yeah. And let's do it. Fucking A. I mean, I feel like I'm making at least somewhat of an example on a small scale when I opt out of these full body scans in general. And when they ask me why, you know, it's funny, you said that the US is the most strict. Well, I've had the most resistance from when I was in London trying to fly out of Heathrow, where I said, I'm going to opt out. And they're like, why are you opting out? I said, oh, you know, I just don't really feel like doing that. Well, what is it? What's your concern? We want to, you know, I can assure you these things are safe. And they put the most pressure on me to not opt out. And like anything I've experienced in the U.S. don't really seem to care. But that being said, every time I opt out, I mean, I will stand my ground with confidence and, you know, let myself be an example. And if anybody asks me why, I say, well, I don't trust these machines and I think it's in a violation of my privacy and et cetera, et cetera. And a few times, other people have followed suit. So, I mean, on a very small scale, at the very least, just by not just by showing people they have the option to opt out of these things is a small step towards like getting people to think a little outside the box.
Dude, I was speaking to a really famous New Zealand radio producer the other day, Thane Kirby. And he said something about when you're doing a small radio gig, and I think this actually applies to the Truth Movement as well. Celebrate every tiny little victory you get. You get one person behind you to fucking celebrate that shit because our victories are so few and far between that we must rejoice and we must have revelry at those points. Yeah, I did that. Awesome. Yeah. That's the kind of thing I think that is our responsibility as people that have the platforms that we do, that have worked for as long as we have, to have the recognition that we do, have worked on our craft, our ability to say what people are thinking and to help them feel good about taking action, I think is paramount above all.
Yeah, that's a great point because those little victories are private and, you know, they don't get broadcast to any sort of like large audience. So that's good. I'm going to take that one to heart. I like that. Well, cause I don't do that.
Well, it just occurred to me that, what was it? Another TruthStream Media thing was about social media feedback loops. So we get stuck in this little feedback loop, a little echo chamber. And ladies and gentlemen, if you're in the chat room, you're stuck in this echo chamber with me. And I'm sorry for that. I truly am. I wish there were more dicks and socialists and other forms of cunt. But the point of this being is that if we're so separated from our adversaries, we don't know what we're fighting against. And if we're so separated from the celebration of our victory, we don't know what we're fighting for.
Wow, that's a good point, man. I like that. That's good. That's really good. You know, unfortunately, I have to get going in a minute because I have a chiropractor appointment to fix my ailing back.
Wow. But, sorry. But, well, we've got about 10 minutes left in the broadcast. So.
Oh, okay. I got 10 minutes.
Perfection.
Unless you want to talk for 10 minutes without me. I'm whatever you want. I'm your guest.
Fuck that shit. I need you here. Now.
All right.
Well, let's get into some deep nitty gritty because we've kind of gone all over the place with this broadcast. Sure. and that kind of thing. And I always find it interesting, like when I'm watching the Joe Rogan podcast or something like that, and he's got another comedian with him, how rare two comedians talking actually erupts into laughter. Because isn't that interesting though? Because we're not working right now. We're not trying to entertain each other. We're not trying to make each other laugh. That's our job. But when we're with another, it's like a colleague. How can we do our job better? And that's when comedians really get fucking serious.
Mm-hmm.
So what would your advice be for anybody who wants to do what you're doing and how to do it better? How have you gotten better?
How have I gotten better? By being open to change. That's how I get better, and by taking things to heart. So as far as being an online contributor, I only started contributing online in the first place because I was getting the call to participate. But it didn't become only about putting content online. I mean, I internalize everything, so I'm constantly trying to make my life better. And being an online contributor has actually taken sort of a, well, unfortunately with JoyCamp, it sort of like had to change a bit in the last year or so because I moved and whatnot. But my advice, gosh, would be to just go for it, man. Just do something. Start. That's my advice. Start. Do something. If you want to be, if I'm going to make a comedic video, make a comedic video. Just do it. If you want to start a podcast, start a podcast. Adjust along the way. I think some of people's biggest problems is staying in this analysis paralysis and fear of stepping into it, or fear of what might happen, or what people might think. And, you know, don't care. Don't worry about what people are going to think, because you're not going to be able to please everybody. I mean, there's always going to be people out there who are going to not like you. And that's just part of the territory. So, and that's in life in general. So my advice is go for it and adjust along the way and find a niche. And, you know, don't just worry about getting a big following. Be a good person. Like we just talked about, like, do the right thing always, everywhere, even if there's no camera on or someone just to witness it, because that's what defines you. And that's what will also influence who you are and how you relate to people. So it's a bit all over the map, I suppose. But yeah, just do anything. I mean, whenever people criticize a video that we make, I say, do it better. You know, if you don't like what we're doing, do it better. Because I'm doing something, and whether or not you like it or not is not really my concern. But I need to do it, and other people are appreciating it. If you think you have an idea of something that could be better, then fucking do it, man. Just go for it. Because what do you have to lose? I mean, we're all going to die. This life is fleeting. And what's the worst that could happen? You know, you go to get to the end, you're like, dang, I was too afraid to do anything. Oops. Like, that's the worst outcome, I think. So just go for it and adjust along the way.
Yeah, I think that's probably about right as well. I was recalling back, I think it was maybe 3-4 days ago, bro, where I went back through all my old videos, all of them, 3,546 videos since October 6, 2009.
Wow.
Went back through all of them. And you know how many of them were unmonetized, bro, because of YouTube's new policies? So I was like, request review, request review, request view review. So I spammed the fuck out of them. And And you know, lo and behold, a couple of days later, it comes back. Hey, here's 70 of your videos that have now been approved for monetization. It's like, yes! And then they send me another email. Here's 30 of your videos that we didn't approve for monetization. I was like, well, it's better than nothing, and at least now I know. 30. And the whole thing was, it's like you're looking back at your list of achievements and you see how far you've come and you realize what you were when you began, okay? Mm-hmm. What was I doing when I began? I was a fucking socialist. I was hanging out with Unite Union and all of, and going to all these protests about everything and making videos for all of these people about the living wage and blah 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 and all these peripheral issues. And then it started to change. It started to change when my realizations deepened. And it wasn't because I was interviewing people in my own environment in New Zealand. It was actually when an American producer noticed me and gave me this gig, right? I was doing the right thing in my own country and doing it so well that somebody 10,000 kilometers away could notice it, recognize it, and give it an opportunity. All right. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's one of the most important realizations, is not just about doing it and doing it well on your own volition and not caring about what happens, but also being incredibly grateful for every single fucking person or opportunity that comes into your life that allows you to keep doing what you're doing.
Yes. And I want to also, now that I'm thinking about it, hearing what you're saying, something else I would, offer as, I guess, advice is, you don't have to be in front of the camera or with an or have an audience in order to feel like you're doing something either. Use, and I am sure that everybody out there has some sort of skill or has an array of skills that can be applied towards helping the world in some way. So it doesn't need to be YouTube. It doesn't need to be a podcast or whatever. But you can maybe you're really good at foraging or gardening, and that could be something that you can turn into a communal event and start, you know, bringing healthy food to people around you. That's just as significant as having a podcast that 100,000 people listen to. You know, you have a skill. Everyone has a skill set. I mean, I said the thing about Joy Camp sort of like waffling, but Joy Camp, the group waffled, but me as an individual is thriving. And I've utilized everything that I've accrued along the way to do what I'm doing now as an individual, which is amazing. I mean, I did 20 years of stage acting, and I did all the writing for Joy Camp along the way. So I'm applying this now comedic writing to stage performance, and I'm doing live poetry in front of audiences. I never saw that coming, but it was a natural evolution of skills complementing each other and then stepping into a fear, trying something out, and then thriving at it. So you just roll with the punches and utilize the things that you already have in your tool belt, and maybe learn some new skills along the way. But, you know, what you have to offer right now is enough. You just have to figure out how to apply it.
Mm. Mm. My wife's having a lot of trouble, you know, figuring out what she wants to do with her life and stuff like that. And I realize you can't actually motivate somebody into changing their life. You know, you can't. Mm-hmm. She's doing jobs here and there. She's looking after babysitting. She's doing that. And I ask her, what do you want to do with your life? And she says, I want to help people. And I say, well, the problem with helping people is twofold. Number one, do they want to fucking help themselves? Mm. And if so, and if they don't, are you really helping them when you try? And yeah. The second part of it is, if they were wanting to help themselves, you don't actually need to be there motivating them all the time. You can give a motivated person one bit of inspiration and they go off on their own, and you never need to hold their hands again. You mm-hmm. know?
Yep.
I wonder.
Totally.
Do I matter? That's a question I ask myself a lot of the time, and the answer immediately comes back: fuck yeah. And I think I think it's actually due to my listeners, and because I'm a narcissist, I need narcissistic supply. I need attention, and I need love, and I need support all the time, because I didn't get that as a child, and so now as an adult, I am a cup that cannot be filled, so I constantly need it, and that's partially the reason why I do this gig. The other part of the reason why I do the gig is because I need power over my own life, okay? And if I become bad, that need for power over my own life will start extending into other people's life. So when my wife tells me that she doesn't know what to do with her life, I don't tell her, this is what you should do, and that's what you should do, and that kind of thing. I'm allowing her to figure it out on her own. Now, there have mm-hmm. been so many listeners over the years that have emailed me and said things like, I'm now doing a radio show because of you. I'm now doing a podcast. I started my YouTube channel, or I invented this thing, or I was really depressed because my family hated me and I was going to commit suicide, but I didn't because of your show. Those kind of things. That makes me understand that there is a real capacity for doing good, even if you are not the one who directly benefits from it. Do the right thing because it is the right thing to do. You need no further justification. And just because something is the hard thing to do doesn't necessarily make it the wrong thing. Thank you very much.
Well Benny, said.
Legendary, bro. JoyCampWebsite.com is his place where you can go get him. And ladies and gentlemen, if you are in the chat room, thank you so much for joining us on this live broadcast. And if you're on the rebroadcast and things of that nature, please, ladies and gentlemen, share these shows around. A lot of very interesting and very important shit has been said during this one particular broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. There may be one of you, maybe just one, for whom it will click. And you'll stop being a slave, and you'll start living in your own power. That is the hope that I hold, and no more. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and have a wonderful, wonderful day.